It is the Locked On Bengals podcast with your hosts Joe Goodberry and Jake Lisco. Find us on Twitter at Joe Goodberry and at Jake_NFL. Please like, subscribe, and share as we try to grow this community and pump out daily Bengals content just for you.
What up, Bengals fans, and welcome to another episode of the Locked On Bengals podcast. Hope you're having a great weekend. If you live where I live in Canada, you have tomorrow off, so I'm excited for that. If you go back to work, well, we're here to talk to you about the Bengals for your Monday. This episode, however, is brought to you by three different sponsors that you might hear ads for throughout the show this week. The first one we'll talk about is Hotels.com. Go check it out. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own hotels with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Be there. Do that. Get rewarded. We're also brought to you today by Untuck It. Dads come in all shapes and sizes, and so should their shirts. Like tall, short, slim, and relaxed. Ever wonder why your dad's button-ups look so long and baggy at the end of the day? It can be hard for guys to pull off a casual, untucked look that isn't sloppy. That's where Untuck It comes in. Untuck It is a solution that fits just right, specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to untuckit.com and use promo code MBA to get 20% off. And Father's Day is coming up, right, Joe, in about a month?
Yeah, it's usually middle of June, right?
Well, make sure you tell your wife to get you some Untuck It shirts. The last sponsor for today's episode is Grip 6 Belts. Grip 6 Belts has a goal to literally make the best belt ever made. It's an easy, thoughtful gift for dads, brothers, husbands, uncles, grandpas, and even moms and wives because they have a women's collection. Ultra lightweight with no holes, no flap, and with a low profile with the buckle laying flat against the waist, the belt is super comfortable. It's in fact the only belt with no holes, no flap, and no bulk. Grip 6 has a special offer for you at grip6.com/lock. That's grip6.com/LOCKE.
And Jake, this is actually the one I went to because I was familiar with the other two, but I didn't know what Grip 6 was. And so if you're getting me a Father's Day gift, I definitely like these belts. They're right up my alley. Just the design and then, you know, describing it. Flat, no holes, no flaps. I'm like, all right, what does that look like? So it looks like a belt. You'll go see it, but they're pretty cool.
Hint, hint for our followers, Joe's a dad. Send him belts.
Does that work that way? Can you get other dad stuff for Father's Day?
I don't know. We could try.
I don't know. you do anything fun this weekend, Jake?
Let's see. It's really nice here.
How nice. Tell me about this island you live on. How nice.
I live on a temperate rainforest paradise.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm going to go swimming today.
Oh, great. I got sunburned today. First warm, real hot day. About 82 degrees in Buffalo, New York. So for us, that's sweltering desert. Oh, man, it's crazy. We just went straight from winter to summer, yeah. As usual.
Yeah, last week we had a day that was probably in the 50s. Today it's going to be 70. It's going to be great. Yeah. Oh, well, let's talk about the Bengals, I guess. It's May. We're talking about football. OTAs start on Monday, so at least something will be happening this week that might produce some news for us to talk about. Jeff Hobson put up a roster breakdown piece on Bengals.com that gave us a little bit of insight on some injuries, at least. Yeah. And, of course, reminded us that there's not much. There is one person in who will be competition for Randy Bullock, Joe.
Who's that?
Tristan Vizcaino.
That doesn't sound like real competition to me, Jake.
Well, he was a restricted free agent or something like that.
Okay.
he kicked with Washington in 2017. So
I wish they would have brought in real competition for Bullock. But it doesn't seem like even when they did, right? Jake Elliott is what I think of. Even though I would have liked to have seen Brown actually get some more kicks, it seemed like he had a strong leg last year. So I don't know. Maybe it would have been a waste of a roster spot anyways. I think there are some key things I'm looking for tomorrow, though. I want to see who's the other third linebacker who starts. where do they put all these offensive linemen? Because who's out? Clint Bowling and Alex Redmond are hurt. Probably won't be back until camp. So who do they put at left guard? Who do they put at right guard? I'm thinking it's John Miller. That's why they signed him at right guard. But I think things can get weird for Jonah Williams and Cordy Glenn there on the left side.
In the pictures that came out from the pre-draft OTAs, it was Westerman at left guard.
I would like that.
I believe it was Westerman at left guard, and the rest of the guys were kind of as expected. From what I could tell, it wasn't a clear shot. But it looked like it was Westerman with the number ones. And, of course, we knew, I think we mentioned on the podcast at the time, that Clint Bowling wasn't a participant then, but he was there. It sounds like he's just hurt. And also, yeah, we've talked about Darquez Dennard has been hurt.
So is Darius Phillips. Both
Darius
those guys.
Phillips is hurt.
Yeah, said training camp for both those guys, which we should see. B.W. Webb and Devontae Harris then, right, as the third and fourth?
I suppose so, yeah.
Right, with Brown, their seventh round pick, getting some snaps in there, I guess, somewhere.
That might be good for Brown, though, get him some extra reps.
Sure, because he'll probably be buried otherwise. He's destined for the practice squad, I would say.
You would think so. It'll right. be interesting, like you said, along the offensive line. Jeff Hobson thinks that they might move Glenn to left guard to let Williams play left tackle. I don't know what that means for Christian Westerman. And, of course, that means that it's likely Bobby Hart at right tackle. And I wonder if this coaching staff would even give Trey Hopkins a chance at tackle. He has played tackle before. That he's listed as a guard center. I think he's now pretty much seen exclusively as an interior lineman.
Right.
But it would probably be worth letting anybody who could compete with Bobby Hart compete with Bobby Hart, if for no other reason than to push him. And it doesn't look like there's really anybody to do that on the roster unless it's, I don't know, Kent Perkins, or unless they actually move Glenn to right tackle. And it does indicate as well in this article that Taylor says they will be trying different combinations throughout the spring and summer, but it sounds like they really want to get Williams to left tackle.
Yeah. He also said previous to this that don't expect it to go deep into camp. They'll figure this out very quickly and early, who their best five are and what the combination is, which also makes me nervous. I think this whole idea that Bowling's going to be out until camp scares me, because if they do move Cordy Glenn to left guard and it's just, okay, Bobby Hart, we signed you, you're our right tackle, the way we thought originally, right? And we thought, well, they're not going to take a tackle. They're paying their two tackles money. Well, I guess if you move Cordy Glenn to left guard and you start Jonah Williams at left tackle, Bobby Hart goes unchecked at right tackle. That's how the Bengals continue to have an issue on the offensive line. I mean, we can dream up scenarios where they get their actual five best out there, and we feel pretty good about those five. I don't feel that way if Bobby Hart gets an unchecked ride to starting at right tackle.
It's really bizarre that they would go into the season without challenging him at all. I mean, I know he was available last year, and I know people are sick of listening to us talk about Bobby Hart, but I think everyone expected that there would at least be competition.
Right.
And right now the competition for tackle, if Cordy Glenn is your left guard, is O'Shea Dugas, Keaton Sutherland, and like I said, Kent Perkins, a bunch of unrestricted free or a bunch of college free agents.
So it's not happening.
It's very unlikely.
You look at national guys too, because some of them are putting out depth charts or expectations for the team, and it's, oh, just slide Jonah Williams to right tackle for a year, you know. And I think a lot of teams would probably just do that. He's got right tackle experience. He's played right tackle just as much as left in college. So, yeah, that would seem like the right idea. Now, if you say, well, might as well get Jonah to left now, and because that's where he's going to play in his career, so just do it now, take your lumps now, and move on. Then fine, then move. If you're going to move Cordy Glenn to left guard, since you're moving him anyways, he's played his entire NFL career at left tackle. Might as well move him to right tackle and more than likely get better play than you are getting out of Hart there. But I don't know what's going on behind the scenes there. I guess we'll find out as this progresses. But as of right now, it's pretty scary.
It's hard to know. I mean, I guess maybe they think they can clean up all his penalties and then he's, I don't know.
Just bad without penalties?
Yeah. I don't know. The other thing that I think we talked about before we started recording is the defensive line shuffle, and you've tweeted about this. It's hard to say who will be that other guy at defensive end. It's going to be Carlos Dunlap for sure, probably 80% of the time. Dunlap will continue, and this will at some point need to stop because he's in his 30s now, but he's going to continue probably to get a bunch of snaps for defensive linemen, more than most in the league, I think. Carlos Dunlap's out there. And then the other tackle spot or end spot will be occupied by Carl Lawson, Sam Hubbard, and Jordan Willis. And that's it. Kerry Wynn, sorry.
Right.
Those guys. And if Jordan Willis doesn't take a step, well, you need Sam Hubbard to take a step for sure, because Sam Hubbard is your guy then on early downs. And Carl Lawson should be healthy, hopefully, you know, by training camp. It sounds like Lawson and Glasgow, speaking of injuries, also out until training camp, finishing their ACL rehab.
Which should be interesting, because if you read Jeff Hobson's piece, he also continues to say that with Glasgow out, and I don't know if this is because of Glasgow out, but he mentions Ronnell Wren, their fourth-round pick at Arizona State, is in with a couple other guys, Josh Chappell, you remember, he also mentions Christian Ringo, as likely guys to push Andrew Billings for the starting nose tackle job, which, to me, I didn't know that that was a job that was up for grabs.
I didn't either. I think that's pretty crazy, especially when you look at the guys that are going to be pushing him. We thought Billings had a pretty good year last year.
Right.
In terms of, you know, doing the things that he was good at. So I certainly hope that, you know, they end up with the best players on the field and that we have a good outcome from these competitions in the early camps, because we've seen them misevaluate talent before, and now we have a new coaching staff in, and this is their first test to see if they can put the best guys on the field. Of course, we don't see what's happening in the practices, so they certainly have better information than we do, but, I mean, NFL teams have made mistakes before, and we've talked about Nate Livings quite a bit.
My concern is because I've gotten the impression that before there was often not honest competition through camps in the offseason, and a lot of times it would be they'd start the guy they knew they were going to start all along, or the path would be there. We'll get him, you know, just a few snaps or a few reps here. We'll let him start second half of preseason for the first 2 weeks. Then we'll let him get the starters with the last 2 weeks, and then he'll be our starter. I mean, I've had somebody tell me this is what's going to happen, and then it happened exactly that way, and then the guy was named starter week four of the preseason, and I'm like, geez, did that really just happened that way? This was the plan all along, and so it often felt like fake competition for me for positions. Now, if this is a sign of real competition, they're going to let Ronnell Wren push Andrew Billings, great. That's honestly what I want from the outside. I think it's what you want, and then I'm reminded of potentially just letting Bobby Hart run at right tackle, so I stopped myself short there.
Yeah, it's weird because you're seeing some competition happening at positions where you feel like okay about the guy at the very least. Right. I feel like pretty good about Billings, if not just okay. But
especially for a nose tackle role, you're not asking him to be a guy that's playing 80% of the snaps. He's playing 35% of the snaps at that. I mean, it's not a huge spot.
Maybe we're just reading too much into the semantics that have been used in the article. And
sure.
It's just, you know, there's going to be competition at some spots, and, you know, he's on a word count and all this stuff. So who knows what's actually going to happen. Hopefully we get a better idea of what's coming out of the camp when we start having some news on Monday, Tuesday this week.
That would be nice. And we're going to talk to Kat Terrell, right, of ESPN, so we can ask her what she sees day one.
That's right. We'll have Kat Terrell on the podcast on Tuesday night. So that'll be your Tuesday night upload, Wednesday day episode. And tomorrow we will be doing, for those of you who listen to Locked On Reds and are also Reds fans, we're going to be doing a Locked On Cincinnati joint episode with Jeff Carr of Locked On Reds.
Yeah. Other things Jeff Hobson also mentioned in terms of injuries, Joe Mixon, don't expect to see him much. Don't expect to see A.J. Green. And what was the last one? Oh, mentioning of Carl Lawson, I wanted to jump back to that, him being out until camp. He says, look for Sam Hubbard to get the start at right end, or potentially Kerry Wynn. No mention of Jordan Willis, who, to me, I think in year three, we need to see development. We need to see a jump in Jordan Willis's game. It would be nice to see that. He played more snaps than Sam Hubbard last year, two extra games. But still, it's surprising he played that much, and I can barely remember a play he made. And it's funny because we're fresh off the heels, in my mind still, of Will Clark and Marcus Hunt and not getting anything out of those day two defensive end picks. And really right now where they're at with Jordan Willis, I wonder if we're going down that same path.
And Jordan Willis can go on to play for the Indianapolis Colts next year and have a Marcus Hunt-like
really
revival to his career. Sure, why not?
And it's funny because I saw an old tweet of mine today. Someone sent it to me and said, I believe it was right before the draft of that year, and I said, if you liked Marcus Hunt, then you'll really like Jordan Willis in this draft, and now I regret it.
Never tweet those things. The last cool note from Bengals.com roster reset for Bengals return to practice article is about an undrafted free agent the Bengals signed. Ventel Bryant came from Temple. I didn't know this about Temple. They give single-digit numbers to their 9 toughest players.
I like that.
And Ventel Bryant wore number 1.
Does that mean he was the number 1 toughest, or you think they just kind of...
I think he's the toughest player at wide receiver for a Philly school.
That's how you beat out Cordy Core, right? Because that guy's got to play special teams, hopefully be a blocker, and can do those dirty work. If Ventel Bryant's going to make the roster, it's probably going to be that way.
Should be interesting. Let's take a break, Joe. Come back. Continue to talk about the Bengals as we get through this May grind and just wait for football to come back. We'll be right back, too.
Welcome back to the Locked On Bengals podcast. We are grinding through this May episode, but I do have a question, and it's something I've thought about lately. And because I see a lot of Bengals fans getting excited for this, and then you see a lot of metrics, and one I had a debate about on Twitter just recently, and I'd like to dig more into it too. But it was, this debate was on the focus of using heavy personnel to run the ball, 2 tight ends and such, you know, bring an extra offensive line, whatever the case may be. But the numbers show that the heavier you go, so instead of 3 wide receivers, 1 tight end, 1 running back, you go with a fullback or a tight end or even bigger than that, your yards per carry drops, your expected yards per carry drops, which is more key because it's not, you know, obviously goal line situations, you're going to go heavy and you only need 1 yard, you get 1 yard. That's okay in an expected average. So, this brought me to thinking the Bengals offense, Zach Taylor, the way he talks a lot about the running game, how they're going to build the running game, looking at the Rams offense, a lot of run play action. Traditionally, and at least now in the NFL, it's become very apparent, you pass to score points. You pass to win the game. Running the ball gives you a lower yards per play, gives you less points per game, which ultimately doesn't do much for you when you go against those teams that we've seen the Bengals recently. You know, when you meet up with the Chiefs or you meet up with the Saints and they just run you out of the building within the first half, because it's a race. It's a marathon to score as much points as possible. So, Jake, this is my question then. And for Bengals fans, for you, is building this offense around the run game the smart play? Is it how we're going to maximize this team?
Here's how it becomes a smart play. It's you build around the run game, but secretly and covertly, you're a passing team.
I like this. I like how you laid that out.
So the idea is that you do put an emphasis on the running game, but you do it almost exclusively to set up the passing game. And a lot of people will tell you, well, you use a pass to set up the run. And you mentioned this earlier with the personnel thing. And I think the most important thing is going to be, does Zach Taylor know how to use personnel to his advantage to use the pass to set up the run and to use the run to set up the pass? And specifically with those 2 tight end sets, and what you pointed out is that those 2 tight end sets need to be when you throw the ball. And when you go wide and, you know, you send, maybe you keep Tyler Eifert on the field. And this is where it gets interesting. If Tyler Eifert is a wide receiver, and an opposing team walks a safety or a linebacker over him, and you keep Drew Sample on the field and you're going to try to run the ball, then how does that work? Or maybe that's when you try to throw the ball. I don't know. The Bengals hopefully can realize that they have some personnel stuff to play with there to set up the run from the shotgun, from the spread, and then pass the ball from single tight end sets. And right. Do you remember anything from that Rams offense book about where they ran? Because weren't they almost exclusively 11 personnel, meaning 3 wide 90%. Receivers, 1 tight end, 1 running back?
Yeah, there were games where it was almost 99.9%. They maybe had 1 snap and a goal line or a 4th and short situation where they come out of 11 personnel. But they're a 3 wide receiver team constantly. Now, they do mix their 1 tight end up and rotate it with a couple guys, one being a receiver type and one being a blocking type. So they knew what they're doing in terms of getting the personnel on the field to maximize it. But, you know, I don't think these findings, these numbers are that profound, because I think if you go out there with 2 tight ends, right, so you're in 12 personnel, 1 being the running back, 2 being the tight ends, that's how you know it. 11 would be 1 running back, 1 tight end. So you're out there in 12 personnel. the defense is going to counter that. So you only got two receivers. The defense is going to counter with a 4-3 or 3-4, whatever their heavy defense is. They're more apt to stopping the run. So the smart thing to do is would be to play action, to pass, to throw out of that formation, right? You get their heavy guys in there, their linebackers in there, and then you attack them. And it works the same for running the ball. You watch the Rams offense, they run it out of three wide receivers. Why? Because the defense is a nickel. So now you've got six guys in the box, and you've got six blockers, six versus six. That's what you want. You'd like it to be five versus five if you can. That's why there's a lot of spread teams with that'll go that'll have just one running back, four wide receivers, or they'll split, they'll detach that tight end, because now you only need five wins to get a play downfield or a positive run. So the more guys you bring into the box, the more blockers you have, the lower chance you have of all of them succeeding. And all it takes versus in a run game is one guy failing to meet his block, and it could be a negative play. So it'll be interesting. This is what I'm looking at for this Bengals offense, because I think we have expectations in terms of bringing this Rams offense to Cincinnati and how these players will fit. But I think the wild card, and we've talked about it a bunch, is Tyler Eifert, because if we count him as a receiver, is that still 12 personnel? Is that still two tight ends? Even though he's detached and split out wide or moved around, is he chewing into John Ross's snaps? Is he, you know, how does this affect their run game? Or are they passing out of that, running out of it? To me, I think that is definitely what I'm looking for in this offense, to see how is this different than the Rams.
It's interesting because Sean McVay, I feel like, said recently in the last couple months they want to get out of being exclusively 11. And again, when we say 11, that means one running back, one tight end. That's what the numbers mean. If you hear 22, that means two running backs, two tight ends. If you hear 10, 21. That means, yep, 21 is two running backs, one tight end. If you hear 10, that's one running back, zero tight ends. So that combination of personnel delineations will tell you who's on the field based on the first number in the sequence being running back, second number being tight ends.
Right.
It's interesting to hear Sean McVay say that they want to go more multiple on offense at the same time when Zach Taylor comes to Cincinnati from a team that was almost exclusively three receivers and then spends a pick on a tight end when he's got Uzama and Eifert on the roster and an early pick on a tight end. So what does that mean? What's the plan for that tight end? Because if you're a second round pick, you're probably expected to play what, at least 40% of your team snaps at a lot of positions?
You would hope so, right?
Yeah, at least, right?
I was looking at guys like Will Disley and who was the other one? Nick Vinette and Nick Boyle for the Rams, to see how much they played as rookies. And generally, it's not 40%. They were fourth round picks, though. So that's where it was the caveat, right? Because these guys are playing 220 snaps, which is on average about, you know, 20-25% of your total offense. But being fourth round picks, I guess that would be, you know, similar to a guy this year, the Bengals, obviously Michael Jordan or Ronnell Wren playing that. So Drew Sample being a second rounder, if he plays 40-45% of the snaps, it becomes interesting. What is the goal there? And that's why I started this off is running the football. And I love the way you answered it, is they're almost putting up, yes, we're a running team, we're going to run the ball, it's going to feature Joe Mixon, which honestly, I think that's probably their best option anyways, especially if they can make it into December and January, still being in this thing. Then you're leaning on Mixon. And I like the idea of leaning on your run game, especially for the games Andy Dalton struggles. But to maximize how much points they put up, how, you know, yardage points, winning games, offense in this league, it's a passing offense. And that's when I get concerned to wonder if they lean too heavy in being a run first team, or is this all just a way to get them to be a play action offense?
I think it's got to be a way to get them to be a play action offense. That's what it was in LA. They're a play action team. And that's the way that you make this team excel. You take pressure off the offensive line. You take pressure off the quarterback. You open up windows in the middle of the field for those tight ends that they've got. You open up windows.
And maybe Andy Dalton's good in the middle.
He's good in the seams for sure.
Yeah.
Seams
Tyler
to tight
Boyd
ends.
Over the middle.
Corners to AJ Green. Seams to tight ends. Tyler Boyd in the middle of the field. Maybe they figure out a way to use John Ross in the middle of the field. Maybe they start using those jet sweeps and misdirection.
And even when we brought Mike Renner on and he talked about Ross being in the Brandon Cooks role, how he thinks that's perfect for him for the long drags and those long crossing routes. Yeah. And like, oh man, just let him run and outrace guys to the other side of the field. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. I'd love to see that.
I've been saying that since they hired Zach Taylor too. It's like that's the role for John Ross in the offense, is he runs 30 yards diagonally.
Right. And just outrace people. And there were times last year I was reminded of a play where they were asking Tyler Boyd to do that, and they're asking John Ross to do it. They're both in the slot. This is versus the Ravens. It was a third down play in that second half of the game. And both are in the slot to the left because they had a tight end split out wide. And Boyd's running a drag, more of a little, it's a little deeper, it's about 7-8 yards, but it's a drag across the field. He's in a foot race with in man coverage versus Young, their nickel guy for the Ravens, where John Ross is running a more of a deeper in, about a 12-yard in, and he fakes that to the top of his route before cutting in. And I just thought, this is a mismatch. You guys are wrong on who you're picking to run these routes. It should mm-hmm. be John Ross running that drag. Let him outrun that guy. Yeah. And let Tyler Boyd use his route running and his physicality at the top of his route to separate. And these are the things that we're hoping to see, right? From a new offense, a new design, is every time we said, what are you doing with this guy? Why are you taking Auden Tate out to put in Cody Core to throw him the ball in 4th and 1? Same game, right? If you remember that play. Whereas I think, and I hope, an offensive minded coach sees this stuff and goes and attacks this stuff first and foremost.
It'll be really interesting to see how the Bengals are different with an offensive-minded head coach. I think maybe we've undersold the difference that this might make. Marvin Lewis, for a very long time, didn't have great offensive personnel in the building, I would say.
Right.
They had Bob Bratkowski for too long. Jay Gruden comes along and does pretty well, but how would you rate Jay Gruden if you had to give him a letter grade as an offensive coordinator in the NFL?
I think he was a B because he got a rookie. Remember the focal points of that 2011 team on a shortened offseason. You got a rookie quarterback, second rounder, and a rookie receiver were the two, you know, that are leading the charge on that offense. And instantly that offense was workable, usable. They got to the playoffs.
Yep.
And it had to grow, and he abandoned the running game. And I don't think the running game was ever good enough with him. But that was also that fell on some of Paul Alexander's shoulders, as I later found out. And I think it's funny that really the good offenses, and especially the second half, I'm thinking of Marvin Lewis's career, so like the last 8 years, was when they had a strong personality as an offensive coordinator, and it was Jay Gruden and Hugh Jackson, right? And those guys could really take over and say, oh, this is going to be our offense, this is what we're going to do, we're going to put the right guys in the right position to succeed. And when it was a lesser guy or a guy that was more of an unknown, I don't feel like those things happened as fast. Maybe they just because they weren't as good as those two, right? That could be it. But maybe I'm reading too much into it and thinking strong personalities helped mold and shape those offense from an offensive mind and offensive vantage point.
Who was the quarterback's coach? I can't even remember his name.
Ken Zampezi.
Zampezi became the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And then they kept Bill Lazor around after, you know, he's running the same stuff. It's just they had too many wasted years, I think, on the offensive coaching staff with Marvin Lewis around. And with Marvin Lewis not being able to do that for the offensive side of the ball, I think they suffered for it. And so I think
to have a good guy on that side, right?
And now they have three or four quarterback coaches in the room. And if you look at A&M's rushing offense, as much as we've trash-talked Jim Turner, it was good.
Yep. If the Bengals have it successful, I was thinking about this the other day. If the Bengals are successful, if this offense is successful, the way we see teams are plucking from the Rams, right? And the Bengals don't have to go to the Super Bowl for this to happen, as we've seen in the past, right? I think we could lose Shanahan. I mean, you could lose guys like that on this. I think Van Pelt still could be a coordinator somewhere, and maybe even more. Maybe these guys end up being head coaches. But thinking of their pedigree and the offenses they've coached in, I definitely could see it down the line where those guys are definite candidates or seen as up-and-comers throughout the league and quickly could get plucked from the Cincinnati coaching staff. I like the offensive guys they put around Zach Taylor. It's always been the defense where we both agreed, other than Jim Taylor or Turner on the offensive line. It's the defensive side where we have the most questions on how they're going to fit together and formulate a defense.
I literally have no idea what any of the defensive coaches are at the NFL level. You have a defensive backs coach coordinating the defense, and who knows what he's going to do? Literally no idea.
I know. I mean, I looked today at the Giants and their snap counts and stuff like that because I wanted to see how often they were using different personnel. And I'm like, well, number one, they had a terrible team. Number two, they were injured like crazy among that defensive line. Number three, Lou Anarumo was the defensive backs coach. He had no say in any of this. So. Yeah. I don't even know what to, you know, how to. It's funny because in the Hobson quote or Hobson piece, how we started the show, he had one quote from Taylor that said, "You can't look at this and say, well, the previous regime kept four that running backs, quote, so we're going to keep." That yeah. wasn't a quote. I thought it was in quotations.
I'll double check.
All right, but anyway, so he says you can't use what previously happened and apply it to us because it's all new. That's true, and I don't know what else to use, though, at this point, because so many of the coaches they brought on and hired are relative unknowns in these positions.
Yeah, that's not a Taylor quote. That's a Jeff Hobson quote, but I think it's true. Sorry. You can't say traditionally X because Taylor and his staff don't have a track record. So a lot of you have asked us, what can we expect from the defensive side of the ball? And like I said, when we got that question, they've hired guys from all sorts of backgrounds. And the most common thread in those backgrounds is Dick LeBeau. But I don't think they're going to come out and try to run a Dick LeBeau defense in 2019. So really, we have no idea.
I don't think a lot of teams, even with direct ties to Dick LeBeau, which is are the right now the Titans and the Steelers, want to run a Dick LeBeau defense. I think it's... And I hate to say it might be a little dated at this point for those zone blitzes, but I would like to have an identity on defense for sure, because I feel they've lacked one since Mike Zimmer left.
That's a certain area to watch. Maybe something that we can ask Cat Terrell about if there's yep. any inklings of what they're going to do, of what's getting installed, because the focus is so heavily on the offensive side of the ball because that's the coaching staff that they have.
Yeah.
We've hardly talked about the defense because we don't know what to expect. So that'll be something that we keep an eye on as the offseason proceeds.
I like the focus on the offense because I think at the end of the day, while the defense...
It needs to be better than Terrell Austin's defense.
That's what I was going to say. The defense has to be better. And just by chance, it should be. If you look at rankings around the league, very rarely do you see the top 10 teams stay the same for defensive ranking year after year. It's a turnover thing. Even when you feel really good about your defense or you feel really bad about your defense, you can quickly move up 10 to 15 spots or down. And so the Bengals, just by rolling that same dice again, with the players, I think we all like a lot of the players on the defense. If they roll that again and end up having a good unit or even a decent unit, that's ranked 16th or so, this team should be much better. So the focus goes on the offense of saying, okay, can they maximize this offense? Because that's the concern, that's the worry. Because if they do, then a lot of people lately are asking, and I retweeted something from Mike Clay and projections. Yeah, 3.5 wins, and that wasn't him guessing they're going to be 3.5 wins this year. It was basically when we went through the schedule, Jake. We found 6 games that we think the Bengals would be favored in. This was 3 games the Bengals would be favored in. 1 tie, 1 push. So I don't think it was too far from where we were. I think we maybe as fans of the team and understanding of where they're how much better they can be, even with the same roster, lean towards a few of these teams of saying, okay, they could be favorites in there.
They haven't been a 3.5 win team for so long. It's hard to really lower your expectations that far because so many of the players are the same players.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's when people say, well, they should automatically be better. They got better here. They got better there. They got a better coaching staff. I would agree with most of those points that people can make there. It just that doesn't always translate to wins.
Especially in year one.
Right. Year one with a new coach. They could be a better team in many ways and have less wins. We've seen some good teams all around the league not make the playoffs every year. And so
like the Falcons last year, I think were probably, they were much worse in their record than I think the quality of the team. They also had a ton of injuries, but
right.
Just an example. I mean, even the Bengals too.
Right.
You could say the Steelers to some extent, there are a lot of teams that were less than the sum of their parts last year.
Right. And I think that could happen or they come out slow. And because of it, they start off 1-3 and we saw that schedule. It's very likely they start off that way. And if you do, changes could be made, lineups could be shaken up, and you may find your footing around week 7, 8, 9. And if that's the case, fine for a first year. But if you can crawl your way to 6 or 7 wins, I think that is very fair. Now, that doesn't have to happen this way. And we did a whole episode on this, so I'm not going to go too deep. But, just thinking in general that if we see a good offense led by Zach Taylor that utilizes the players correctly, I don't care how many wins they have because I think that would be a feeling of heading in the right direction.
That's step one. And then step two, we got to figure out the defense at some point. And is Lou Anarumo the guy to do it? Well,
I kind of feel like he's not. Like, maybe is that part of the reason I don't talk about him either? Because
No reason to feel great about him, right? He's a defensive backs coach from a bad defense. He used Landon Collins well.
Great.
So cool. He did something that was pretty innovative and useful, and has
got the best out of Janoris Jenkins.
Yeah. So and BW Webb now in Cincinnati. So, you know, some reasons to think he's a good defensive backs coach, and who knows what that means for calling a defense. I mean, Terrell Austin's a guy that everyone thinks is going to go on to be a head coach in the NFL, and I think he's set back from that path now, and now he's a lower assistant for the Steelers.
Yeah, he is, that's right.
But, I mean, that was the thought on him when he came to Cincinnati, then he flopped, and so you never know, I guess is the point we're trying to make. Some other programming notes going on around the Bengals Twitterverse this week. Willie Anderson is making the rounds. Willie Anderson was on the Orange and Black Insider at Cincy Jungle and joined Brandon Thorne, who we had on last 2 weeks ago. And the episode with Brandon Thorne and Willie Anderson is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Some of the best stuff I've listened to. I don't listen to many podcasts. I listened to that one.
These are the questions I'd love to ask him, but don't feel I'm glad Brandon Thorne gets this interview because he's such a good O-line guy that he can ask these questions and talk to Willie Anderson. You know, I'd rather bring Willie on and say, so what really happened, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I want to know what happened in those locker rooms.
Right.
And also maybe talk about Fatburger, I guess.
I would love to talk about Fatburger. Maybe we can get him on here. We should try for that.
We will try. We'll try. We got to try to, you know, all these players we're talking about, we got to get some of these guys on.
What else happened in the Bengals Twitterverse? You said the other things.
Willie Anderson had those two.
Those two.
He was on Cincy Jungle as well.
I was going to add that Paul Denner Jr. is leaving the Cincinnati Inquirer, going to Athletic to cover the Cincinnati Bengals. So he will be joining me and Jay Morrison. And if you don't have your subscription, you're going to miss out on a lot of Bengals content.
Oh, man, if only the Athletic sponsored us. But now they have their own podcast. It's not going to be a thing. Here's the thing, guys. If you go listen to the new Paul Denner podcast, stay with us. Please.
I know. It's kind of weird for me. I'm like, do I promote the Athletic Cincinnati podcast?
We do.
Am I contractually obligated to? And then while I also have a Bengals podcast, I think you can listen to two podcasts.
Yeah, I think you can too. They're only once a week anyway. And right now they're talking about the Reds. That'll do it for this episode of Locked On Bengals. Tomorrow we will be Locked On Cincinnati with Jeff Carr, the host of Locked On Reds. And then Tuesday, we have Kat Terrell from ESPN.com. We'll ask her about horse racing and probably also Bengals stuff because she's apparently like really into horse racing.
Awesome.
So it looks like you want to make a last note before I mention our sponsors.
Yeah, so you want to definitely listen to tomorrow's with the Reds because I don't know anything about current MLB baseball. So I'm going to try and make comments and ask questions as if I don't know anything because I don't.
There you go.
Although there is a Reds player that's from my hometown.
Who's that?
I'll talk about it.
Ooh, something to look forward to. It's so exciting. This episode was brought to you by Hotels.com, Untuck It, and Grip 6 Belts. Go check all those out. Hotels.com, the URL is obvious. Get rewarded when you travel. Untuck It, you can get 20% off by using promo code MBA and Grip 6 Belts. At grip6.com/LOCKE, that's grip6.com/lock for a special offer as well. We'll see you next time, Bengals fans. Until then, have a good one.